is the Gershon Dixon. He's from the management team. And then to my right, I will allow the honorable members to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Is it Van Rooyen, right? Okay. Yeah, I didn't want to pronounce your last name incorrectly. My name is Zandile Machozi. I'm from the Inkatha Freedom Party.
Good afternoon, Mr. Van Rooyen. My name is Patricia, surname is Peacock, from the ANC.
Good day, sir. My name is Linda Moss. I'm from the African National Congress.
Afternoon, Mr. Van Rooyen. My name is Officer Blas, and I'm from the Democratic Alliance. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Van Rooyen. My name is Henry Andres Shemeni from the Economic Freedom Fighters.
Good afternoon, Mr. Van Rooyen. There's no conflict of interest, although I've been to sweat a few times. Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh Imam from the National Freedom Party.
Welcome, Mr. Van Rooyen. We are interviewing for the members of the Critical Infrastructure Council. The speaker referred to the appointment of the private sector and civil society members of the council to the portfolio committee. It hurts me that there is a balance between private sector and civil society. Civil society means that we could interview someone from a trade union. And someone from the trade union may not necessarily have a PhD. So people would ask me, but why do you have engineers and then bring someone from civil society to be interviewed as well? But we are balancing that because of the Act. The Act prescribes that we should bring members of the private sector and civil society. The report was considered on the 4th of November. The speaker wrote me a letter. The Act was promulgated on the 28th of November 2019 by the President, assented to and promulgated, and that was the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act. The National Key Points Act, or 102 of 1980, was repealed. And so the council is then appointed within the prescripts of the new Act. So, as I said to you, I'm Tina Jumat Peterson, I'm the chairperson of the committee, and I'm also the chairperson of the panel. In your view, and your time for the interview starts now, it is now 14:06. In your view, what did you consider to be your attributes, your key strengths, weaknesses, qualifications, experience, your understanding of this Critical Infrastructure Council, and what you would bring to the council as an individual?
I think that the main thing that I have is that I have very wide experience and education as well. As you will see from my CV, I worked for about 12 years as a civil engineer, first with the Department of Transport and then with the National Roads Agency, where I was promoted up to management level. So I have experience in managing infrastructure in a government department as well as in a parish table. I have also got extensive experience in running my own business, so I have experience in the private sector. And then, of course, I've also got the experience in civil society, working in an NGO. And, you know, I regard myself as a gender activist, and I think it's really important that one has, as you are very happy to hear that you explained that you need the balance between civil society interests as well as people with experience and qualifications, for example, in engineering. So I think I do bring, you know, all of those things to the table in one package.
Thank you very much, Honourable Peacock. Thank you, Chair. My question would be, what is your understanding of critical infrastructure? And what is important for you in the infrastructure? Why is it important that we have this in South Africa or in this country?
So my understanding from the Act is that critical infrastructure is all systems and buildings and infrastructure that is necessary for the proper functioning of our country, excluding military infrastructure. That is, if anything would damage or happen which would prevent that infrastructure from functioning properly, then that would interfere in a major way with how our country functions.
My apologies. Would you be comfortable taking off your mask?
Okay.
We do sanitize everything, even the mic has been sanitized. It's just that we're having difficulty hearing you properly. So if you're comfortable, you don't mind?
And it's in order, Chair, thank you, because we are also spaced apart.
Okay, thank you very much. My apologies, Honourable Mason.
Chairperson, it might be helpful if you come closer to the mic, as I am closer to the mic.
Could you also come closer, but closer to the mic, please? Eh? Thank you, that's better. Thanks a lot. Are we happy then? Honourable Peacock's question, you could still answer?
I think I have answered it, but maybe people didn't hear. So that is all the systems and infrastructures that are essential for the proper functioning of our country. In my understanding, it, in the Act at present, it excludes military infrastructure, and that it's important to safeguard this infrastructure, to identify which infrastructure it is, and then also to safeguard this infrastructure, because if something did happen to damage or degrade this infrastructure, it would interfere with the proper functioning of our economy and our country.
Thank you very much, Honourable Peacock. Do you have a follow-up? Thank you, Chair. What do you think is the overall intention of the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act?
Yes, so the way that I understand it at present is that it is, as I said previously, to make sure that the infrastructure that has been identified to be classified in this manner would then be monitored, and to ensure that whatever security arrangements are necessary would be made to protect this infrastructure in the national interest.
Are you happy? Honourable Shembeni?
Thank you, Chairperson. Do you think that the public should be allowed into the critical infrastructure and be free to take photographs? And then when answering this, can you also give me the differences between, or give me two examples of different critical infrastructures? Thank you.
Yes, I think that a lot of critical infrastructure, the public would need to be allowed there for the proper functioning of the infrastructure, depending on what it is. With regards to taking a photograph, there would not necessarily be a problem with taking photographs of the infrastructure itself, however, of the security arrangements that are attached, that are there to safeguard the infrastructure, it would not, public would not be allowed to, and it is stipulated as such in the Act at present. With regards to examples of critical infrastructure, I would imagine that could be things like airports, international airports, our harbours, possibly national roads of critical importance, any important buildings whose function is necessary, power stations, Kuburg nuclear power station, for example, those type of infrastructure.
Thank you very much, Honourable Shembeni.
So, meaning, when I said now the types of infrastructure, I wanted to find a difference where they can take photos and where they cannot take photos. For instance, in the airport they can take photos. But what about the armory?
So I didn't get the last word. What about the
armory?
Armory here.
Yes. Are they also allowed to take photos in that place? Are they being allowed into that place, the public people?
Okay, so I'm not sure if the armory would be included in the, under the Act as it says at present, because the way I understood it, military infrastructure or infrastructure under the control of the Department of Defense is specifically excluded. But if the armory were included, I think that, for example, taking photographs of the outside of the building would not necessarily be problematic. It would, you know, only if you are taking photographs of anything that would be sensitive from an intelligence point of view, which could affect the security of the building, which would allow someone to be able to maliciously damage the infrastructure. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Mayor.
Thank you, Chairperson. If photographs have been taken of a security installation, maybe against the advice of whoever allowed them on the premises, what would you recommend should be done? Should the instrument that was used, either a camera or the phone, should they be confiscated? Or what should be done when a person has taken a picture of a security installation?
Yes, I'm sure one would need to ensure that the material that has been photographed is confiscated in order that the images cannot be shared. But in addition to that, I think the person who has taken the photograph should be held liable of an offence and should be prosecuted as well.
Thank you very much. Honourable Sheikh Imam, you may ask your question.
Thank you, Mr. Pangoy. What do you believe is the role of the police and the security agencies in respect of the critical infrastructure and protection there?
So their responsibility would be to safeguard the security, in other words, to take action if there is any threat to the security of the infrastructure. It is a balance of responsibility between the private sector and the state, because some of the infrastructure that may be identified will be actually owned by private ownership. And then there would have to be a dual responsibility between the owner of the infrastructure and the state to safeguard the infrastructure. So it would very much depend on what it is. And the police in particular would be responsible to take action in the event that the security of the infrastructure has been breached.
Honourable Mesh.
In the number of places, including police stations, private security companies are used. So in which cases would you say security should not be provided by private security companies, or do you think they are qualified to provide security in all instances? Thank you.
I think it would very much depend on what the infrastructure is. But in principle, I don't have a problem with private security companies being used to safeguard the infrastructure, as long as, depending on the sensitivity, I suppose, of the whether you know, there's anything of a secret nature that's being housed there, for example, and if in that event one needs to just make sure that the personnel that is involved in the security have all been properly screened, and that one ensure that they are trustworthy, that security won't be breached.
Thank you very much, Honourable Sheikh Imam. Do you have another question?
Can I go to my maintenance?
You may.
Okay. Now, yeah, I think you understand and appreciate. You understand and appreciate the challenges we got in the country, particularly with collusion, maladministration, corruption, lack of capacity, and a whole lot of problems. Have you ever been charged criminally for fraud, corruption? Have you ever been brought before any disciplinary hearing that say you've worked in some of the state-owned entities or government departments for dereliction of duty, gross insubordination? Even if you've not been charged, has there been any allegations made against you for fraud, corruption, theft, and that kind of thing?
No, there's nothing that I'm aware of.
Thank you very much, Honourable Majority.
Thank you, Chair. In your opinion, what are the key challenges facing the Council, and what role should the Council play in strengthening critical infrastructure?
Something that occurred to me in connection with this is that the maintenance of the infrastructure that has been identified does not seem to be included as part of the mandate of the Council. I think that it's very much focused, as it is at the moment. It's very much focused at present on security against attacks or something like that. But I think that our critical infrastructure also faces, especially because the infrastructure might be in the control of a very diverse, ranging from private sector to different government departments, etc. And I think that ensuring that the infrastructure is maintained to a standard where it will continue to function, I think, is something that needs to also be taken into account.
Thank you very much, Honourable Majority. Do you have a follow-up? Any other member? Honourable Sheikh Imam?
Thank you. Given the fact that many of these critical infrastructure falls under different departments, but ultimately the council and steps must take responsibility overall. What do you believe needs to be done to get at that collaboration between those departments? Like you might talk about water infrastructure that falls under water and sanitation, or that falls under transport or PRASA, you know. So how, what level of collaboration do you believe needs to be created so that in order to get optimal success and protection of this particular infrastructure?
I think a lot of that should be identified at the time when a specific piece of infrastructure is identified as falling under the auspices of the council. And then at that stage it needs to be considered, you know, how much of a responsibility the owner or the government department needs to take with regard to safeguarding the infrastructure. The Act also does make provision for, there will be representatives on the council from the different government departments to take that into account, that cooperation and collaboration. But if it is a government department that is not at the time represented on the council, the Act does make provision for, I think it's the Minister of Police to actually co-opt additional members from that department in order to ensure that type of cooperation.
Thank you, Honourable Sir Blanche.
Thank you, Chairperson. Meneer Van Rooyen. Name the key strengths from a technical and leadership perspective which you will bring to the CIC if you are appointed, and what do you think are your areas of growth? Thank you.
I am a qualified and experienced civil engineer, but in terms of that, I think specifically my strengths are developing systems and processes and procedures. It's also, I think, strengthened by the fact that I have a law degree, and so those kind of procedural strengths. My personality-wise, I think honesty and integrity is what I bring to the table.
Honourable Sir Blanche, you happy? Any additional member? Honourable Majosi.
Thank you, Chair. Just on the issue of growth, I didn't quite get where maybe you would like to grow. Maybe if you are appointed as one of the council members, which part of growth would you like to experience at that time?
Oh, yes, you're correct. I forgot to answer that part of the question. That was a difficult question to answer. I would actually say self-confidence. I think I need to learn to assert myself and in a calm and rational way. That, I think, is something that I need to work on personally.
Then, Honourable Moss.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Stakeholder relationships. Managing key stakeholder relationships is an important responsibility of the CIC. At times, stakeholders can be very demanding. Describe how you manage unreasonable stakeholders' expectations, please.
Yeah, I actually do have some experience of this in terms of the work that I do at present. I work a lot with communities, and often communities do have very unreasonable expectations. And I actually enjoy doing that kind of work, and I found that the main thing to do in that situation to diffuse tensions and conflict situations is to just really be honest with people. I think people, when they are held to account or if they are in a position where they have to give difficult information to people that people don't necessarily want to hear, they tend to be scared to just, you know, tell it like it is. And I think that's the most important thing, to just not shy away from the facts. I also had quite a lot of experience of that during the time when I was working with the National Roads Agency. And there were, at that stage, I was involved in proposed toll road schemes on the N2 in the Garden Route, as well as around the Cape Metro. And I had to conduct the information sharing meetings with members of the public who were objecting to the proposed toll roads. And I actually quite enjoyed that. It was very interesting to be able to listen to people's issues that they have and to be able to respond to them. And actually that's another thing, in addition to the issue of, you know, sticking to the facts and not shying away from the facts. I think to actually really listen to people and to actually really understand what people are and what their concerns are is very important, because if people see that you are really engaging with them and that you really care about what they are saying, then that helps a lot. And that also helps one to understand what the real issues are, in order that you can find solutions to the issues that people have.
Do you have any further questions? Honorable Meshu and then Majose.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sir, I would want to know, how would you resolve a situation where stakeholders demand conflict with your ethical principles and values, particularly if one or two of members of the council agree with their demands?
Yes, that's always a difficult one, and I think that's one of the areas in which I have grown in the past few years. Where I previously used to get very emotional in those kind of situations and lose my temper, because my default situation is one cannot back down from an ethical position. You know, if something is wrong, you can't participate in a decision that is not correct from the ethical point of view. If I was in a position like that, where other members of the council did not agree with me, I cannot impose my will on other people, and that is what I've learned with age comes that type of maturity. The only thing that you can do is to try to convince people with logic, to explain to them what your point of view is and why you have a specific point of view. But ultimately, if it comes to a vote and you are outvoted, you have to accept that.
Mr. Van Rooyen, you have a BSc Civil Engineering, but you work for Sex Workers Education and Advocacy Task Force. The two do not seem to be consistent in a conventional time frame and mindset, but in an unconventional way it makes a lot of sense. It shows that you're a very unconventional person. How would you be able to operate within a structure which is security related and in the very which is steeped in tradition and old convention?
Okay, I did leave engineering because I was a bit of a square peg in a round hole, I suppose. I am a gay man, and at the time when I was working as a civil engineer, it was very difficult to be a civil engineer and to be a gay male. For the first part of my career, I was in the closet, and I was doing very well. But when I came out of the closet towards the end of my career, it became extremely difficult for me. At the time, homosexuality was still illegal in this country, and the discrimination that we faced was, was quite harsh. I must be honest, it is directly because of that that I did start working in a non-profit organization, specifically an organization which fights for the rights of sexual minorities and for people who sweat. It has also got a very strong culture of supporting LGBTI people. So that's something that I really believe in and that I feel passionate about. I think that in the years since I left the National Roads Agency, the culture of our country has changed a lot, and I think that I have also changed a lot, whereas at that time I was not mature enough to be able to withstand the pressure of working in a very straight male-dominated environment. I think that I am confident enough now in myself and who I am to be able to, in fact, I look forward to it because I think that the time that I've spent working in a civil society organization has also, it's coming to an end. I need to find something that is a bit more intellectually stimulating, and I need to return to work that is more technical in nature.
You do know that we are not broadcasting live, but the interview is being recorded and that it will be televised later. So you would have no difficulties with what you have said being televised.
No, I don't, not at all.
You would also understand that when we shortlist, we have had several applications, and then we shortlisted 20. And out of the 20 that we're interviewing, we will further condense it to 10, and then out of the 10, the minister will select 5 for appointment. Would you object to, when we look at criteria, we look at gender, race, class, age? Would you have a problem being nominated on the basis that you are part of the LGBTQI+ community?
No, I wouldn't. I think it's really important. I don't think there's enough emphasis on that in South Africa. And I think that maybe it's not as important for younger people in the LGBTI community who do not face as much obstacles as I did when I was growing up. But it's still there. And I think that it is important for young gay people to have role models to look up to, for young gay men to know that they don't have to become a hairdresser or a interior decorator, that they can achieve whatever they want to in life.
Is there anything you'd like to ask the panel?
I don't think so, apart from maybe just sort of how long the decision-making process would be and that type of thing, and maybe, I don't know, is it a full-time position, is it a part-time position, you know, those sort of details.
So, as you know, the Act was promulgated and the matter was then referred to the Portfolio Committee. Obviously now, because of COVID last year, there has been a delay in our response to the interviews and the shortlisting. So what we are doing now happens to be within the recess period of all the members. So they're not supposed to be in Parliament, but they have come so that we could do a physical interview and not a virtual interview. However, is one member that will have to interview virtually because of her medical condition. And members, just an update. It seems that if we can interview her tomorrow. Gershwin? Yes. So that will mean that I do not need to reconvene you further and along the recess period. And then after this, so Parliament only reconvenes in August. So we have to take this back to the Portfolio Committee for the report to be adopted. And then once, so the report will only be adopted in August. So once the report is adopted, we then refer it to the National Assembly to be tabled in the National Assembly. From the National Assembly, it goes to the Minister. And then the Minister nominates his further candidates, which out of our 10 you'll take 5. And those would be subjected to a further level of vetting. It will be another state security process. So, unfortunately, we have no control over how long it's going to take. If it was up to me, I wouldn't go through all this process because, as you can see, I work the day before Christmas and people find it, they will investigate you if you sign the document on the day before Christmas. Well, I've seen that, you know, people don't expect you to be working. So you must be crooked if you sign, and very corrupt if you sign a document on the day before Christmas. That's the perception in our country, unfortunately. Also assuming that everybody does celebrate Christmas. So that is unfortunately the reality of the matter. Whether it is a full-time position or not, it is a member of a council, so those are not normally full-time position, but the time which will be requested of each candidate initially will obviously be quite strenuous, since there hasn't been a council for quite some time and there has been a vacuum in the work that has been done around critical infrastructure. So I think there's a backlog that has to be redressed. I'm not responsible, the committee is not responsible. That falls within the ambit of the responsibility of the minister. Does that answer your question? Any further questions, members? Mr. Van der Wijn, you happy? Thank you very much for availing yourself to be interviewed. And thank you very much for being frank and open. I really respect it, and good luck. We will be in touch with you, and we appreciate your patience. My apologies for keeping you waiting, and we really do respect the time of individuals. You from Cape Town? So you didn't have to travel. Okay, there are others who have to rearrange their schedule, so fortunately I don't have to rearrange the schedule, but it's a day out of work and we appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time, I appreciate it.
Thank you. Discrimination again.